Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 305 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we're going to be talking about the economics of homesteading. We're going to be talking about, you know, answering that question, can homesteading save me money? Will growing my own food save me money, etc., etc.? And it is a real quandary, a bit of a conundrum. How do we even go about thinking about it? Well, we're going to be going into a bit of depth today, talking about all the different ways we can look at our homestead economics and trying to just make it clear where and where not we should be thinking about saving money and how that looks in our actual family's budget, because it's a really complicated puzzle. I think, first off, just to talk about the idea of economics at all, we need to think about what we mean by that. What we really usually mean is we talk about the financial value, and that is what we are going to be really spending most of our time on today. But there are a lot of things when it comes to homesteading that we do that give us values that aren't necessarily financial, and they're worth considering. And I think that they're really a huge part of what makes it all worthwhile, certainly to me. So while we will be talking about monetary terms a lot of today's episode, we also need to bear in mind that those non-financial values that we get are certainly worth baking in to the pie that we're baking today. So the first thing to think about is, you know, there's so many things that we simply cannot justify financially if we were to put a price on our time. This is the first step, I think, to understanding that idea of, you know, homestead economics. The idea that I can grow vegetables in my garden and spend the time that it takes to grow carrots, for example. Let's say to grow enough carrots for my family for a year, I would need to spend, I don't know, let's just try and do a bit of thinking out loud. And this isn't necessarily going to be accurate, so it's just a guess. Let's say I'm going to spend maybe 3 hours of the year sowing carrot seeds. That seems a bit high. Let's say two hours. Then we're probably going to spend double that in transplanting carrots and thinning carrots. So we've got about 6 hours in the sowing, transplanting and thinning. Now, for that space that the carrots are going to take up, we're going to spend at least another couple of hours weeding throughout the year. So we're up to 8 hours now. And then we have the harvesting and cleaning. That's going to be at least another 3 hours. So we're at 11 hours now. So a really long day is going to provide my family with all the carrots they can eat. And that doesn't take into account everything, I suppose. There's a few other considerations there, you know, when we're taking the leftovers up to the compost bin, the carrot tops and what have you. But leaving all that aside, let's say we're up to about 11 hours and we can even round that right down and just call it a day. So let's say it's going to take one day of labor to produce all the carrots that my family would need for the year. Well, then what we can do is we can look in the supermarket and see how much carrots cost. And I can probably, I think, buy a bag of carrots for just under a pound. Let's call it a pound. And one bag of carrots is going to last my family a week. There's 52 weeks in a year. So for £52, I can purchase all the carrots my family are going to need. Would I personally be prepared to go to work for £50 a day? Is that enough for me to pay my bills and feed my family? No, it's not. So I'm already choosing to spend my time on something that I could certainly economically not make a case for by growing carrots. You know, we can do the maths on that and work out that it costs more to grow carrots just in my time, before we've bought any seeds, just in my time, it costs me more in carrots than, it costs me more in my time to grow carrots than it would cost me to work for half a day, say, and buy all the carrots I needed for my family, or even less than half a day, whatever it might be, based on your wages. So there is certainly a case to be made for a lot, not all necessarily, for a lot of the crops that we grow, that the economics just don't stack up. Now, of course, I've chosen carrots specifically because they are a really, really cheap vegetable to purchase. There are lots of other things, for instance, asparagus. Now, our asparagus bed is established now, and assuming we weren't moving house, which is really unfortunate, that would just be producing for the next few decades. Now, all we'd have to do is spend maybe 2 to 3 hours a year weeding that, maybe another hour mulching it, so 3 hours, and then it's just harvesting. So let's say 4 hours in total for all the asparagus we could eat. Well, that is probably a cost benefit to us. But what I'm trying to say is there are lots of things that we do, even though we can't economically justify them in our time. Now, there's a whole nother side to this coin, and that is, why are you doing what you're doing? Now, you might say, I'm doing it to save money. And we perhaps would look at what we've just said and thought, well, that doesn't really work out for a lot of the things we're doing. But there's more to it than that. I personally love it. I love what I do. I really enjoy the process. We'll get into some of the other benefits a bit later as to why that's the case. But for me, it's a hobby. Now, lots of people have hobbies. If your hobby is boating, if your hobby is going out on a sailboat, then I would venture that that's going to put very little on the table or in your pocket. There's going to be very little return from that, and that's going to take up just as much time. If your hobby is cycling, there are obviously other benefits from all these things, health benefits and what have you, but that's not going to have a tangible benefit that you put on the table and feed to your family, something that reduces your food bill. But we would spend time doing that. Whatever your hobby is, you're going to spend time doing it, and we do it because we enjoy it. And we don't necessarily need our hobbies to have an investment, to have a return on that investment of time, do we? That's why they're hobbies. They're things we just enjoy doing. Perhaps you play football for a local football team and you go to training twice a week. Well, you're probably going to spend more time in 1 week going to 2 training sessions and then a match with all your traveling time than I'm going to spend growing a year's worth of carrots. So we don't necessarily need to see a return on that investment of time, do we? It's dependent on how we look at our time. If we are really struggling and we're not enjoying what we're doing, then I would strongly suggest that you cut back a bit and do a little bit less and just do the amount that you enjoy. If you're doing more than you enjoy, you're probably doing too much, would be my advice there. So there's that time cost, which I wanted to have this conversation and get this out of the way before we look any deeper at the other cost benefit analyses that we might do on our homesteading economics. And we have to kind of just put that to one side, because like I say, to me, it's a hobby. I do it because I love it. I really love it. I enjoy it. I get so much out of it that's not the food on the table, but also that food as well. I was a little bit pernicious, really, when I was doing my analysis with the carrots, because I was obviously choosing the cheapest carrots I could buy from the supermarket. And if I wanted to buy organically grown, local, with as low food miles as possible carrots, then that equation might look very, very different. It would certainly be a lot more expensive. Whether or not that would mean that we'd break even, I suspect it probably would. And we can even think that our cost in time there is worth it financially. But that term worth it doesn't just have to be financial, does it, as we've discussed? So that's the time bit out of the way. I think I can just very easily make my peace with that by saying that I enjoy it, it's my hobby, and I've had lots of hobbies in the past that might have included just going to the pub and drinking that certainly cost me more than just the time. So this is one where the time, I think, is well spent. So that's that out of the way. Next up, the actual investments that we make in money, and we might be buying seeds. Well, we can mitigate that to a degree by using heirloom seeds and by saving our own seeds. Perhaps we still want some F1 seeds in some areas. I certainly do. I think I'm always going to be using a mixture of F1 and heirloom varieties in my garden for lots of different reasons. So I'm quite happy to buy some seeds every year. And realistically, I probably spend about £20 a year on seeds. So that certainly is a cost that I get returned. You know, I can't see at all that when you think about your average shopping basket, if you were buying all of your food, we're going to be spending that in just a couple of weeks on fruit and vegetables. So well, maybe even less than that, maybe 1 week. So I'm really comfortable that that's not a huge cost. But what can be a huge cost is the actual piece of land. Now, if you're buying the piece of land, realistically, you're unlikely to recoup that money in vegetables. But again, that's not necessarily what needs to happen with it, because when you buy a piece of land, it's also an investment. You still own the equity. You still have that property, don't you? Renting is perhaps something that we might need to square that circle on, and we might need to make the rent actually pay for itself. Well, of course, there's a much smaller outlay in rent, and that's going to come down to what you're using the land for and your own personal economics of working out how much you have to pay. Here in the UK, and I know in lots of places around the world, we have something called allotments, and the cost of an allotment can be really, really affordable, really, really cheap. I'm talking less than £100 a year in some cases. Now, it varies wildly based on where you are and what's available to you. But there are certainly some options out there for renting a piece of land that are cost effective and can be cost effective. Another option for this, if you're looking for some land, if you're desperate for a small part of land to grow vegetables on, just by telling as many people as possible, you might find that you have your needs met in such a way that doesn't cost you anything. Because I've been offered land in the past where it's just an overgrown garden from someone who doesn't have the time or effort or ability for whatever reason to manage it themselves. And all they want is someone to be in there and making sure it doesn't get overgrown with weeds and look like an absolute eyesore. And, you know, these opportunities are few and far between, but the best way to avail yourself of them is to make everybody that you meet know that you're looking for a piece of land to look after, and you never know what might come of it. The next thing about the economics of homesteading is a huge benefit, and I think it's just something I spoke about in a recent episode, the homestead mindset, that mindset of make do and mend, you know, make do with what you have or do without. And that's going to save you money. The idea that you're not going to throw something away and buy a new one just because it's broken and you can't be bothered to repair it, that's going to give you extra use out of things. It means you're going to be more judicious with your spending as well. Having that homestead mindset, you're much less likely to have frivolous spending on things that you just don't need. And that has a cost saving. And a cost saving is just as good as a cost earning, believe you me. The other thing that we're going to get from homesteading is a load of transferable skills, and not least of which is the skill of self-reliance. And with that, That is, I think, a huge economic benefit. The idea of being self-reliant and doing as much as you can for yourself means you're far less likely to be paying for services. You're far less likely to be paying someone to come in and mow your lawn if you are a homesteader, if you have a self-reliant homestead mindset and transferable skills that you've learnt yourself. You're much less likely to require a handyman to come in and do odd jobs around the house, to fix a leak or hang a shelf. These are things you're going to be doing yourself. And all of these things, I think, go into the economics of being a homesteader. And certainly when we look back into the history of homesteading and the history of pioneering new lands and being a homesteader because you had to be, because that was the only way to exist in a certain space that was cut off from anywhere else, you know, you had to be resilient and you had to be self-reliant, and there was no easy commerce within which to participate. And that means that you are naturally ready to do a lot of the things that you might otherwise have to pay for yourself. And also, you know, being a homesteader, having that homestead mindset, we're doing that thing that is the focus of this season of the show, and that is reducing the gap between your production annual consumption. And by doing that, you are obviously and clearly you are reducing the amount of money that you are spending. And every time you reduce the money that you spend, you are doing exactly the same to your budget as increasing the money that you're bringing in. The two are exactly identical to one another. And by having that idea of self-reliance and by doing something else with that I talk about on the show all the time, which is taking things back that one step further, by using ground that you're not having to buy in fertilizer for because you're producing your own fertilizer in the form of compost, you are again reducing the costs of everything that you produce. By reducing your waste footprint, you are naturally reducing the costs of the things that you buy. You're buying much less disposable items. And all of these things have a huge financial gain in the long run. And these things all compound each other. It's one of those beautiful things about homesteading is that when we look at an area like composting and we add that to our repertoire, it automatically enhances so many other things that we're doing. It reduces our waste, it reduces our need to buy in certain things. And this compounding effect is something I find really, really beneficial towards the whole eclectic idea of homesteading. And the other thing that we mentioned right at the get-go, and the last thing really, are the values that aren't financial when we're talking about the economics of homesteading. And these are the advantages to our mental health, to name just one. You know, the idea of being involved with the nature's cycles, being outside more often, it has huge advantages for our mental health, to our physical health as well. Doing all these physical things has a huge advantage to our physical health. And again, the advantage of upskilling yourself and learning all of these different skills which are transferable, whatever you end up doing in the next 2, 5, 10, 20 years of your life, these skills are all fantastically useful. So there are lots and lots of benefits outside of the financial benefits that we need to include in our picture of economics. Now, with all that said, I suppose what I've really done so far is just make a case that the idea of trying to make an economic argument for what we're doing is nonsensory, or at least not necessary. And while I do believe that's true, there are certainly some things that it can purely make financial sense to do. For egg production, for example, egg production we can definitely do and make it financially sensible. We can even produce gluts to sell. We can also do other things and create value-added products on our homesteads to bring an income in. I've done an episode on this way, way back, and perhaps we'll touch on it again in one of our Back to Basics episodes about making an income from our homestead. But we can produce the sort of things that command a really high price in the shops and at farmers' markets. We can produce artisanal handmade soaps or cheeses, things that if you bought them in the supermarket, it takes your breath away, the price of them. And perhaps you need to go to specialist stores to source them. These are all things that we can produce to sell and perhaps produce a small income stream for ourselves, but also these are the things, and this is the beauty of it, these are the things that we're sitting down to eat for our dinner and to give to our friends every day of the week. When we sit down to a dinner here, we're sitting down to a dinner with meat that was hand-reared, home-butchered, home-slaughtered, home-cured, if we were talking about bacon or ham, home cured, with food miles that we measure in meters, with absolutely no, you know, single use packaging required, no carbon footprint as far as food miles, organic, raised with the highest standards of welfare. And we're serving that with homegrown, organic, zero food miles vegetables and homegrown, homemade stocks and soups and sauces. And if you were to put a price on that diet, if you were to put a price on that food, if you were buying that in a supermarket, then all of a sudden, we're not talking about that £1 bag of carrots, are we? We're talking about the really high-end, artisanal, highest quality food that there possibly is. And when you also say, yep, and I also did all that myself. All of a sudden, we're talking about something that's priceless, that you cannot put a price on. And from my personal experience, I know that to be the case. You know, the meals that we sit down and eat, when it is, as I just described, and I've prepared it all myself, it's just, you can't put a price on that. And when you have guests for dinner, as we rarely do, but sometimes do, you know, being able to say that as well, it's just a beautiful thing that you can't swap for any kind of commerce. You can't buy that. You can't do a day's work and then trade it for that feeling. It can't be done. So that to me is the true economics of homesteading and what it means to me and why I do it and why I can comfortably and confidently and happily with a smile on my face justify it, justify the expense, justify the time. Now, we haven't mentioned at all this episode things like buying greenhouses or compost or all those things. Of course, they're part of the equation. Most of those things, when I'm buying things like a polytunnel, I like to think of it, I like to do a bit of maths and think, is it going to pay for itself in the long term? Am I going to increase my yield in the long term enough that it pays for itself? And if it does, then I'm very happy to make that purchase. And generally speaking, I think that I get it right. And most of the time it does. Of course, I don't get it right every time, but that's how I look at the economics of those purchases and invite you to do the same. You know, is this something, if you're going to build a cold frame to extend your season and you're going to source most of the materials as salvage or from Freecycle, but you need to, for whatever reason, buy some hinges, is that cost going to pay yourself back? Well, I would suggest that 9 times out of 10 it is. And it's down to us and our homestead mindset of making things last and being practical and repairing things ourselves to do the final leg of that journey and make sure that things do last as long as they need to pay you back. And of course, this all, just as we always say, this adds to our own personal sustainability and reducing our carbon footprint and all those other things. Again, we're talking about compounding our interests across the board. So for me, the idea of homestead economics comes down to far more than justifying what I spend. It comes down to far more than justifying my time. And that's how I look at it. I do thoroughly encourage you all to get in touch and tell me how you look at it, and if you look at it any differently to me, what you think about what I've said today. And also get in touch for episode 310, where we're going to be doing our Ask Me Anything episode. I really, really do encourage you all to get in touch with your questions. I really appreciate them. And also tune in on Friday for our Permaculture in a Nutshell book by Patrick Whitfield giveaway, which will be given away to a patron. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I'll be in touch really soon. Cheers. This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.